We've all heard of the Bermuda Triangle, right? Where over the past 60 years, about 50 ships and 20 planes have mysteriously crashed or just vanished over the Atlantic. But have you ever heard of the Nevada Triangle? It's much smaller than the Bermuda Triangle and much more dangerous. Not 20 planes, not 200 planes. In the past 60 years, the Nevada Triangle has claimed 2,000 aircraft. That's an average of nearly one plane a week, every week, for six decades. But it's not the number of crashes in the Nevada Triangle that makes the story so strange. It's why nobody talks about it. The Nevada Triangle covers a region of the Sierra Nevada Mountains between Nevada and California. It's typically defined as spanning from Las Vegas in the south to Fresno, California in the west, and Reno, Nevada in the north corner. It's a remotely populated area of 25,000 square miles of mountain desert. 2,000 planes have been lost in the Triangle in the last 60 years, and many crash sites are still unknown. But the Triangle isn't completely empty. Most of its land is owned by the United States government, including several national parks. And on the northeast border of the Nevada Triangle, there's a military base, Groom Lake, better known as Area 51. But it's not just the number of crashes in the Nevada Triangle that's strange. What's bizarre is these disappearances aren't just casual civilian pilots. Most of the missing planes were flown by experienced pilots and disappeared under mysterious circumstances, with wreckage never found. Many cases involve highly trained Air Force pilots flying state-of-the-art military aircraft. But it's not just the planes that vanish. It's also people. The most famous crash involved famed aviator Steve Fawcett, who vanished in 2007. His disappearance ignited a massive search that led to the discovery of eight more wrecks. Fawcett was not some weekend warrior. This guy held world records for flying solo aircraft and gliders. He even flew around the world in a hot air balloon. He was also an expert in cross-country skiing, mountain climbing, ultramarathons, and even swimming. If there's one man who could survive anything, it's Steve Fawcett. But on September 3rd, Fawcett, flying a single-engine plane over Nevada's Great Basin Desert, took off and never returned. After a major search effort that lasted over a month, he was declared dead. But Fawcett wasn't the first to disappear in the Nevada Triangle without a trace. One of the first planes lost in the Triangle was a B-24 bomber that crashed in 1943. The bomber, with a full crew, was on a routine night training mission. They took off from Hammerfield in Fresno on their way to Tucson, Arizona. Gone. It never made it. An extensive search began the very next day. Nine B-24s were sent out to find the missing plane. But rather than finding it, another bomber went missing. It just vanished. Then in 1955, when Huntington Lake Reservoir was drained for repairs to the dam, it was there. The investigation into the second bomber stated the plane had experienced high wind turbulence and began to lose hydraulic pressure. When the captain saw what looked like a snow-covered clearing, he told his crew to bail out, but only two jumped. However, the two soldiers who parachuted and survived made statements that the lake wasn't frozen. When the plane was finally found, it was resting 190 feet below the water with its five crew members still at their stations. In the meantime, Clinton Hester, the father of the co-pilot of that first missing plane, began a private search for his son that would last for the next 14 years. When he died in 1959, he still hadn't found any evidence of his son or the plane. But a year later, geological researchers working in a remote part of the desert found airplane wreckage in an unnamed lake. This led them to search the area, and they found that the wreckage wasn't just in the lake, it was spread out all over the surrounding mountains. There was still no sign of the crew. Divers explored the wreckage in the lake, but found only tiny traces of one of the crew members' remains. After the dive, Army investigators confirmed the wreckage to be that of the first missing bomber, piloted by 2nd Lieutenant Willis Turvey and co-piloted by 2nd Lieutenant Robert M. Hester. The lake is now known as Hester Lake. A bittersweet ending to a multi-decade mystery, but the stories only get more mysterious. Another crazy Nevada Triangle story happened in 1957. On May 9th, Air Force Lieutenant David Steves was piloting a T-33 training jet, taking off from Hamilton Air Force Base near San Francisco on a flight to Arizona. Well, the plane disappeared. This was a big deal, not just because of the missing pilot. The T-33 was a classified aircraft. After a thorough search without success, the Air Force declared the 23-year-old pilot officially dead. But 54 days later, he reappeared. He had strange slashes on his body and had lost 40 pounds. Dressed only in combat boots and tattered clothes, he had made his way to a camp in the backcountry of Kings Canyon National Park, east of Fresno, rough terrain. He said something in the plane exploded, so he ejected. Dragging his parachute to keep warm and injured from his landing, he crawled over 20 miles in freezing temperatures for 15 days without food or shelter. Eventually, he came upon an abandoned cabin, where he found a few cans of food and fishing gear. He said he survived by fishing and hunting with his pistol. Now, some questioned his story, even speculating that he sold his plane to the Soviet Union. Steves always maintained he was telling the truth. For the next several years, he flew small aircraft over the Nevada Triangle, crisscrossing the area where he said he crashed, looking for the wreckage, but he never found it. 8 years later, 31-year-old Steves was killed in another plane crash. His story about the first missing plane was still in doubt. But then, 20 years later, Boy Scouts on a hike in Kings Canyon found the canopy of his jet. So Steves was telling the truth about ejecting. But the rest of the plane still hasn't been found. On October 24, 1941, four military aircraft went down in the Nevada Triangle in a single day. A squadron of 19 Curtiss P-40 Warhawks was en route to McClellan Field in Sacramento, California. A short time after takeoff, they entered the Nevada Triangle, and the squadron got lost in the mountains. Four planes went down. First Lieutenant Richard N. Long was killed, while another of the pilots, Lieutenant Leonard C. Lydon, parachuted to safety. He said his P-54 fell within a mile of where he landed in Kings Canyon National Park, but the wreckage was never found. To this day, 80 years later, despite the fact that Kings Canyon has over 600,000 visitors per year, no wreckage. Another famous case was Charles Ogle, a wealthy real estate developer who lifted off from Oakland, California in 1964, but vanished en route to Las Vegas. The Marine Corps-trained pilot was never seen or heard from again. On July 11, 1986, Major Ross Mulhare flew an F-117 into a mountain near Bakersfield, California. However, immediately after the crash, the site was declared a national defense area. The entire region was closed to public access, and the airspace was closed to civilian flights. Why? Well, because the F-117 wasn't supposed to exist. Air Force investigators were at the crash site for several weeks. Local firefighters who responded to the crash were sworn to secrecy. It was another 2 years before the Air Force admitted the existence of the F-117. The cause of the crash has never been officially revealed, and the stories go on and on. But the Nevada Triangle is not unique. In fact, it's just one of 12 triangular areas on the planet with a lot of strange disappearances. Have you always wanted to learn another language but never found the right way to make it stick? Well, let me tell you about Babbel. Babbel is a language learning app backed by science that actually gets you speaking conversational phrases from day one. No more wasting time and money on ineffective apps and tutors. With Babbel's 10-minute daily lessons by over 200 linguists, you'll be amazed at how quickly you learn. Babbel prepares you for real-life situations, which for me means when I'm at an authentic restaurant, I can actually converse with the staff instead of just pointing and miming. I hate miming. I hate putting on the makeup in those white gloves. Anyway, scientific studies have proven Babbel's effectiveness. Just 15 minutes of Babbel teaches you an entire college semester of language. It's why over 16 million people worldwide use Babbel to master a new language. Now, here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/yfiles. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/yfiles, spelled babbel.com/yfiles. Rules and restrictions may apply, but don't they always? When you think of places where planes and boats go missing, the first place that comes to mind is the Bermuda Triangle. This area off the coast of Florida is the location of hundreds of mysterious and often inexplicable ship and plane disappearances. The triangle's boundaries range from Miami in the west, Puerto Rico in the east, and Bermuda in the north. The Bermuda Triangle was first put on the map after the spectacular disappearance of Flight 19, a squadron of Navy torpedo bombers on a practice run in 1945. By all accounts, the day was perfect for flying. Pilots who had flown earlier in the same day reported ideal flying weather. Flight time was calculated as 2 hours for the exercise. The Avenger torpedo bombers to be used for the training exercise were well-equipped with a long history of safety and performance. Lieutenant Charles Taylor, the flight leader that day, was an experienced pilot of the Avenger aircraft who had spent more than 2,500 hours flying that plane. Most other crew members had at least 60 hours of flying time each. The plane started taking off at 2 p.m. local time. At about 3 o'clock, one of the pilots was given permission to drop his last bomb. After completing the bombing run, Flight 19 was supposed to follow the flight plan, north to the Bahamas, then west-southwest to Fort Lauderdale. But that never happened. 40 minutes after the last bomb was dropped, Lieutenant Cox overheard a series of transmissions with the commander from Flight 19. Several planes reported not knowing where they were and asked each other for their compass readings. Finally, the flight leader, Lieutenant Taylor, got on his radio too.
Both of my compasses are out, and I am trying to find Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm overland, but it's broken. I'm sure I'm in the Keys, but I don't know how far down, and I don't know how to get to Fort Lauderdale.
Cox informed the Naval Air Station that he and his aircraft were lost. They advised Taylor to put the sun on his port wing and fly north up the coast of Fort Lauderdale. During this time, no bearings could be made on the flight, and the IFF transmitter couldn't be picked up.
We'll fly 270 degrees west until landfall or running out of gas. Holding 270, we didn't fly far enough east. We may as well just turn around and fly east again.
These transmissions suggested something was seriously wrong with Flight 19. The crew couldn't tell which direction they were heading or distinguish between east and west. As it became obvious that Flight 19 was lost, air bases, aircraft, and merchant ships were alerted. A Martin PBY Mariner departed from Naval Air Station Banner River, and even though it was after dark, the plan was to find Flight 19 and guide them back. 10 minutes after takeoff, the search plane called in a routine radio message. Then, the PBY Mariner vanished, and it was never heard from again. A massive search was immediately launched for the pilots and planes of Flight 19 and the now-missing PBY Mariner. It lasted 5 days and involved hundreds of sea vessels and planes, and they found absolutely nothing. No debris, no seat cushions, no bodies, not even an oil slick. One of the investigators said, 6 planes and 27 men disappeared completely as if they had flown to Mars. An investigation was immediately launched into the disappearance of Flight 19 and the PBY Mariner, and a 500-page Navy Board of Investigation report was published a few months later. It came to the conclusion that Taylor was not at fault because the compasses stopped working, and the loss of the PBY Mariner was attributed to an explosion. But very few of Taylor's colleagues bought that explanation.
The leader was an experienced combat pilot. These were reliable planes in good condition, and it was a routine training mission. We were alerted to look around the islands and to keep searching the water for debris. They just vanished. We had hundreds of planes out looking, and we searched over land and water for days, and nobody ever found the bodies or any debris.
But something happened to those planes. Other researchers have reconstructed the events of Flight 19 quite differently than the commonly repeated claims of a compass malfunction. Charles Berlitz was an American linguist. He was also an Army intelligence officer and author from Yale University. After a long career in academia, he became famous for his books on the paranormal. One in particular, titled simply The Bermuda Triangle, was one of the first popular books on the subject and sold more than 20 million copies in the 70s and 80s. In that book, he put together a significantly different timeline of events that conflicted in many ways with the official report. It also included alternative versions of the radio communications between the tower, Airman Cox, and Flight 19, and they paint a much stranger picture.
Calling tower. This is an emergency. We seem to be off course. We cannot see land. Repeat, we cannot see land.
What is your position?
We are not sure of our position. We cannot be sure just where we are. We seem to be lost.
Assume bearing due west.
We don't know which way is west. Everything is wrong. Strange. We can't be sure of any direction. Even the ocean doesn't look as it should.
During all this time, the powerful transmitter at Fort Lauderdale could not make any contact with the five aircraft, but the plane-to-plane communications were working fine. And there was nothing wrong with the Fort Lauderdale tower radio, because the radio operators heard Lieutenant Cox loud and clear. He even requested permission to go deeper into the Atlantic Ocean because he thought he knew where Flight 19 was. The request was denied, but the response from Taylor was overheard by ham radio operators all along the Florida coast.
No, don't come after me. They look like they're from outer space.
In 1974, a reporter named Art Ford, who had covered the disappearance of Flight 19 29 years before, corroborated the ham radio report and the "don't come after me, they look like they're from outer space." He confirmed that quote. He said he talked to the local ham operator who overheard the transmission at the time and later verified it in a previously secret transcript that had been given to him by a Navy source. News reports at the time only reinforced the notion that something paranormal had occurred off the coast of Florida that day. One board member called it the strangest case in the history of naval aviation. Evidence seems to point to the idea that some sort of electronic fog had interfered with the plane's instruments. This fog affected radio transmissions and possibly even led to the strange disappearance of the PBY Mariner. But this would all be conjecture, unless, of course, someone could fly through such an electronic fog and live to talk about it. So, somebody did. Bruce Gernon is a certified seaplane flight instructor and a master captain with a Coast Guard license. He spent his life flying around the Caribbean and the Bermuda Triangle. He became famous when he almost became one of its victims. On December 4th, 1970, Gernon and two passengers entered something mysterious shortly after taking off from Andros Island in the Bahamas. They were headed to Miami, and in the Beechcraft Bonanza A-36 plane he was flying, the flight normally took 1.5 hours. But thanks to a strange encounter with something, Gernon somehow made this trip in less than half that time. A few minutes after takeoff, his plane was engulfed by a strange electrical cloud that seemed to be pursuing him.
Upon entering the cloud, we witnessed an uncanny spectacle. It became dark and black, without rain, and visibility was about 4 or 5 miles. There were no lightning bolts, only extraordinarily bright white flashes that would illuminate the entire surrounding area. The deeper we penetrated, the more intense the flashes became, so we made a 135-degree turn to the left and headed due south out of the cloud.
Gernon's plane became trapped in the cloud. About 15 minutes later, he saw an opening in the haze with blue sky beyond. He headed toward it to escape, and as he approached, it morphed into a tunnel less than 1 mile wide that was quickly closing. And if he didn't get through in time, he would be trapped. Accelerating to over 230 miles per hour, by the time he reached the gap, it had narrowed to barely 200 feet across. Flying directly through it, he saw clouds swirling around his aircraft in a counterclockwise motion. And when he emerged on the other end, he suddenly had a feeling of weightlessness and forward motion. He says he audibly gasped as he looked behind him and saw the opening collapse and then just disappear. When he looked around, he saw that all his electronic instruments were malfunctioning, including his slowly spinning compass. The plane appeared stable and level, but it was surrounded by a gray fog instead of the blue sky he expected. Calling into Miami, He established contact and reported his position as 45 miles southeast of Bimini at about 10,500 feet flying west. Miami reported back that they could find no evidence of him in that area, but they did have an aircraft matching his plane signature directly over Miami Beach. Checking his watch, Gurney reported that he had been airborne for only 34 minutes. He shouldn't be anywhere near Miami yet. They must be looking at another aircraft. These events took place in only about 3 minutes. Looking down, he saw the barrier island of Miami Beach and realized he was indeed over the city. Landing at Palm Beach, he checked the time and realized they had made the 75-minute trip in only 47 minutes, a complete impossibility. In order for that to be true, he would have had to have traveled more than 100 miles in only 3 minutes. What Gurney appears to have encountered is the same strange electronic fog that so many others, including Flight 19, must have encountered. However, Gurney kept his wits about him and avoided being swallowed up forever into some kind of space-time warp as so many others had. Gurney's case seems to give credence to the theory that some sort of unusual physics operates in the triangle and may have played a role in so many of the odd disappearances that have happened there. But it's also likely that we don't have all the details of these cases because many are still classified. In 1997, the details of an operation called Sky Shield 2 were finally released to the public. The operation took place just 15 years after Flight 19 vanished, but the details were covered up for decades. This was likely because it wasn't just pilots and planes that went missing. It was a full arsenal of nuclear weapons. Operation Sky Shield 2 was a nuclear live-fire Air Force training exercise in the Bermuda Triangle zone on October 14, 1961. There were six B-52s scheduled to participate in Sky Shield 2. There was no significant weather along the flight path. The planes were given code call signs for the exercise, and Pogo 22 was the designation for the B-52 commanded by Captain Roland C. Stark Jr. About 300 miles northeast of Bermuda, all six planes split up and raced toward the coast. Pogo 22 was farthest north. When the formation was about 3 miles apart, Pogo 13 caught her last glimpse of Pogo 22. Everything was apparently normal and visibility was 7 to 10 miles, but Pogo 22 was never seen again. Once it was discovered that Pogo 22 did not land with the other craft, a massive search was initiated. Just like with Flight 19, although over 280,000 square miles of the ocean was searched, no trace of the aircraft was ever found. The Nevada Triangle is landlocked, so it's mostly planes that vanish. But the Bermuda Triangle is mostly over water. Many strange cases also involve ships. And ships have been disappearing in the Bermuda Triangle for a long, long time. One of the earliest stories is of a French ship named Rosalie that sailed from Hamburg, Germany, bound for Cuba in 1840. She was found adrift in the Bermuda Triangle several months later, completely abandoned. Her sails were set, her valuable cargo of wine, spirits, and textiles were left in place, but there was not a soul on board. If pirates had attacked her, there surely would have been signs of a struggle, and the cargo would have been looted. Instead, the ship was found completely in order. All that remained was a cat and several half-starved canaries in cages that hadn't been fed for at least a week. 40 years later, multiple crews vanished on a single ship. A sailing ship named the Ellen Austin found a derelict vessel in the Bermuda Triangle and placed a crew on board to sail the vessel to port. Like the Rosalie, this ship had fully intact cargo, deployed sails, no signs of fighting or piracy, and no crew. After a few days of sailing in parallel, the Ellen Austin lost sight of her companion in a strange fog that suddenly appeared all around them. The next day, they regained sight of the ship, and upon boarding it, once again discovered that everything was in order and peaceful, but the second crew, their own crew, was gone. So a third crew was placed aboard the derelict ship. Same story. A fog rolls in, they lose sight of the ship. Then they find it. Everything is completely intact, but the crew was gone. At this point, the captain gave up. This derelict ship wasn't worth the trouble. But probably one of the most famous of the ship disappearances was the case of the Cotopaxi. Steaming from Charleston, South Carolina to Havana, Cuba, the Cotopaxi disappeared 2 days out of port. This was December 1st, 1925. The Cotopaxi became famous when it was featured in the opening sequence of the 1979 film Close Encounters of the Third Kind. There, it's depicted as being found in the Gobi Desert, thousands of miles away from the Bermuda Triangle, presumably placed there by aliens to demonstrate their power. The Cotopaxi didn't make news again until 2018, when internet news reports claimed that the wreck of the ship had been found adrift after 90 years in Cuban waters. The Cuban Coast Guard announced they'd intercepted a derelict ship on May 16th, just west of Havana. After trying to contact the crew several times, they finally boarded the ship and discovered it was the 100-year-old Cotopaxi. The captain's logbook was still in his cabin, but there were no signs of the crew's remains. Everybody had vanished. Over the years, many people have tried to come up with explanations for why so many ships and planes simply disappear in the Nevada and Bermuda Triangles. One theory says that the Nevada Triangle is just one of 12 regions on the planet with high concentrations of strange occurrences. Ivan T. Sanderson was a British biologist. He wrote about nature and travel and was also a founding figure in the science of cryptozoology, the study of unknown animals. In 1968, Sanderson described a grid of 12 areas on the Earth he named the Vile Vortices. These areas are where strange phenomena and disappearances occur. He attributed these strange events to places on Earth where wrinkles in space-time allowed alien spacecraft, poltergeists, and strange animals to penetrate the veil between our mundane reality and what he called the netherworlds of the devil. But the most important of these Vile Vortices beyond the Nevada and Bermuda Triangles is the so-called Dragon's Triangle off the coast of Japan. The Dragon's Triangle exhibits the same characteristics as the other triangles, but its history is much older. The first reports of missing ships are over 800 years old. In the late 1200s, Kublai Khan, the grandson of Genghis Khan, tried to invade Japan via sea. He set out with a massive war fleet, hundreds of ships. But as they crossed the Dragon's Triangle, Khan's entire fleet and 40,000 crew members vanished. Disappearances have been reported there ever since. Over the last century, hundreds of ships and planes have disappeared in the region that stretches from just south of Japan at about 33 degrees north latitude to as far south as Yap Island at 9 degrees north. The heart of the Dragon's Triangle is right in between 19.5 degrees and 33 degrees north. This exactly parallels the boundaries of the Bermuda Triangle more than halfway around the world. In the 1950s, the New York Times called the area the Devil's Sea and claimed that 9 ships had been lost in the previous 5 years. The publicity became so intense that in 1955, the Japanese government sent a ship, the Kayumaru, to investigate. Guess what? It also vanished. The Japanese government then imposed a no-go zone in the area, almost exactly on the 33rd parallel. Unfortunately, this didn't prevent the disappearance of the largest British ship in history. On September 9, 1980, the 90,000-ton MV Derbyshire was headed for Japan, but the ship and its 42 crew members never made it. The Derbyshire's course brought it straight through the Dragon's Triangle. As it approached Japan, the ship reported strong weather but no other problems. It was never heard from again. A massive search was launched immediately. It lasted over 2 weeks, but no sign of the ship or crew was found. No debris, no oil slicks, no lifeboats. The Derbyshire simply sailed into the Dragon's Triangle and vanished. Almost 15 years later, a new search finally found the wreck of the Derbyshire and chalked up the disappearance to human error. But many of the crew's families didn't buy this explanation. The Derbyshire was only a few years old and had the latest safety equipment, and there was no distress call. Could the crew have really made an error that sunk the ship so quickly? Or was something else to blame? To this day, sailors and pilots alike are warned to avoid the Dragon's Triangle. Many theorists chalk up the disappearances to bad weather, but the fact that the Japanese authorities issued a warning proves that the Dragon's Triangle legend has some merit. Some experts believe it's just one part of a large pattern of strange phenomena around the planet. The Nevada, Bermuda, and Dragon's Triangles are all in the Northern Hemisphere, but two of Ivan Sanderson's Vile Vortices are located in the Southern Hemisphere, almost at the same latitude on either side of the South American continent. One is centered around Easter Island to the west of South America, perhaps a remnant of the sunken continent of Lemuria. The other is due east, roughly on the same parallel, just off the coast of Brazil. It's easy to dismiss these two locations as figments of Sanderson's imagination, except there's one disturbing fact that hints at the possibility he may have been onto something. This same area, covering thousands of square miles, is directly beneath what many people call the Bermuda Triangle of space. It's called the South Atlantic Anomaly, and it is very, very real. The South Atlantic Anomaly is an area of intense radiation that correlates with the centers of the southern Vial vortices. It's also a place where the Earth's magnetic field is weakest. It was first identified in 1958. Spacecraft passing through it experienced instrument malfunctions, mechanical breakdowns, and other equipment issues. The International Space Station, the Hubble Space Telescope, the Space Shuttle, and even high-flying jetliners have all experienced instrument failures in this area. The effect seems linked to where the Van Allen radiation belts come closest to the surface, as close as 120 miles above the Earth. This adds up to a phenomenon that sounds a lot like what happens in the other triangles. Now, is it possible that in places like Bermuda or the Dragon's Triangle, the local magnetic fields fluctuate and weaken? This allows far more Van Allen belt radiation to reach the Earth's surface. Could this cause the weird storms that claimed Flight 19 off Bermuda, or the four Navy planes over Kings Canyon in the Nevada Triangle? It's possible. However, there are also competing theories about why there are strange weather phenomena in these regions, especially in Nevada. Some claim the area's climate creates a special type of atmospheric condition that can actually rip aircraft from the sky. In Steve Fawcett's case, there was a breakthrough about a year after he vanished. In the area where he went missing, a hiker found Fawcett's ID cards. A few days later, the crash site was located about 65 miles from where Fawcett took off. Two bones were found a half mile from the crash site. The bones were confirmed as belonging to Steve Fawcett. The NTSB didn't find any mechanical issues with the plane, so what could have caused it to crash? They say the reason was likely weather. Fawcett was flying through the mountains when he vanished. Mountain wind was the cause. Wind blows smoothly up the side of a mountain, and these updrafts can be used to help an aircraft make it over the top. But on the other side of the mountain, downdrafts can become much stronger and turbulent. They can sometimes yank a plane into a steep descent, sometimes a stall, and sometimes a crash. The NTSB studied the weather on September 3, 2007, the day Fawcett disappeared. They found moderate turbulence in the area where Fawcett was flying, including downdrafts that registered over 400 miles per hour. Fawcett's plane could only climb at a maximum of 300 miles per hour. The speed difference meant that Fawcett's plane couldn't climb faster than the wind pushing it down, which caused him to crash into the mountain. But could weather really explain the hundreds of other missing aircraft? Nope. Some have claimed the reason so many flights have disappeared is Area 51, where the Air Force is known to test secret prototype aircraft. And it's not just Area 51 and the Nevada Triangle. Military bases are also in close proximity to the Bermuda and Dragon's Triangles. Area 51 is the most well-known location for secret military experiments, but it's not the only one. Most experts think the disappearances are due to the geography and atmospheric conditions. The Sierra Nevada mountains run perpendicular to the jet stream, which creates volatile, unpredictable winds and downdrafts. This weather phenomenon is sometimes called the mountain wave, where planes are seemingly ripped from the air and crash to the ground. The jet stream is so powerful that it can severely affect aircraft. It's a highway of strong winds between 5 and 7 miles above the ground, which puts it around 37,000 feet, which is also near the cruising altitude of commercial jets. They can easily slip into the jet stream and get pushed off course or past their top speeds. On January 2024, several commercial aircraft were caught in the jet stream and ended up flying over the speed of sound. Sound travels at about 760 miles per hour or 660 knots. But Emirates Flight 222 from Dallas to Dubai reached 777 miles per hour off the coast of Newfoundland. American Airlines Flight 106 from JFK to Heathrow reached 778 miles per hour, or 676 knots, a little over 200 miles per hour faster than normal cruising speeds. Both flights arrived nearly an hour ahead of their scheduled time, similar to the effect Bruce Gernon encountered in the Bermuda Triangle. However, these meteorological explanations don't explain why there's no trace of wreckage or debris. As for why so many of the crash sites in the Nevada Triangle are never located, it's probably because of the complex, rugged terrain and the heavy vegetation. During the search for Fawcett, 8 other crash sites were found. So chances are they're all out there, hidden within the peaks and valleys of the Sierra Nevada mountains. In the case of the other triangles, sometimes wreckage is just misidentified. For example, the Cotopaxi, the ship that disappeared for almost a century and then turned up off Cuba. Well, it turns out the Cuban Coast Guard must have misidentified the ship because the wreck of the Cotopaxi was discovered off Florida in 2018 and officially identified in 2020. Like the crash sites in the Nevada Triangle, new searches of the Bermuda Triangle frequently uncover dozens of new shipwrecks. The Bermuda and Dragon's Triangles also have some of the most perilous waters on the planet. Typhoons and hurricanes frequently appear in both regions. Not only that, they contain some of the deepest parts of the world's oceans, at depths humans still have never explored. Anything could be down there, and if you ask me, something is. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. My name is AJ. This has been The Y-Files. If you had fun or learned anything, do me a favor, leave the podcast a nice review. That lets me know to keep making these things for you. And like most topics I cover on The Y-Files, today's was recommended by you. So if there's a story you'd like to learn more about, go to theyfiles.com/tips. And special thanks to our patrons who make The Y-Files possible. I dedicate every episode to you, and I couldn't do this without your support. So if you'd like to support The Y-Files, consider becoming a member on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get all kinds of perks. You get early access to videos without commercials. You get first dibs on products like the Hecklefish Talking Plushie. You get special access on Discord. And you get 2 private live streams every week just for you. Plus, you help keep The Y-Files alive. Another great way to support is grab something from The Y-Files store. Go to shop.theyfiles.com, and we've got mugs and t-shirts and all the typical merch, but I'll make you 2 promises. 1, our merch is way more fun than anyone else. And 2, I keep the prices much lower than other creators. And if you've followed The Y-Files for a while, you know it's important to me to keep the cost to you as low as possible. All right, those are the plugs, and that's the show. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and know that you are appreciated.